My name is Ramona Africa. I'm Minister of Communications for the MOVE organization. I'm also the sole adult survivor of the May 13th, 1985 government bombing that you saw on this video. I'm a former political prisoner of 7 years as a result of being a survivor of the bombing. And I'm also a representative of the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal, a journalist that's on death row in the United States. But the most important thing to me is that I'm a revolutionary. And as a revolutionary, I have committed myself to taking a strong, uncompromising position against injustice, inequality, brutality, all the things that we see around us that are wrong. Revolution to MOVE is total. It's not one thing. It's everything that's wrong, which comes from this system that we live under. And it's just not in the United States. It's worldwide. In our travels worldwide, you know, every time we talk to people, people are complaining about the very same things. Brutality, police brutality, government corruption, the abuse of animal life, the poisoning of our environment, you know, poverty, the lack of health care for people, you know. Everybody's complaining about the same things. And it's all coming from one source, one enemy, one, you know, small group of people that are running the whole entire world. And this is what MOVE is directing ourselves at. MOVE was coordinated back in the early 1970s, founded by a man called John Africa. And John Africa brought people together from all different backgrounds, all different nationalities, made us a family of committed revolutionaries, and cemented the bond of family with one simple, fundamental, common belief that life, every living being, all of life, is not a priority, but the priority. And it's that simple principle, our belief in that simple principle, that put us in direct conflict with this rotten system that we live under. A system that has absolutely no regard for life. Life means nothing to those running this system. They will compromise clean air for a dollar for air pollution. They will poison our water for a dollar by sanctioning industry that poisons the water. They will accept putting toxic waste in the soil of the earth that feeds us, feeds all of life. Yeah. To those running this system, capital punishment, executions are acceptable whether the person is innocent or not. In the United States, there was a ruling by the United States Supreme Court that said after a defendant had, you know, all of their appeals had gone through the appeal process and was about to be executed, at that point, innocence was not the issue. And they made this ruling in a case of a Mexican brother who was on death row and was like this close to being executed when someone came forward and admitted to the murder, gave all the details of the murder. It was in a case entitled Herrera, the Herrera case. And Herrera's lawyer went running into court, you know, filing for a stay, saying, look, hold it, we got new evidence. You cannot execute this man. We have a confession. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, yeah, right, what do we care? At this point, we're not concerned about innocence. Innocence is not the issue. And they proceeded to execute this man. This is the mentality of the system. A mentality that will allow and accept without problem the slaughtering of innocent baby seals together, you know, just across the board. You know, slaughter millions of mink, fox, rabbits, just so people can hallucinate that their coat looks better on a human's back than it does on the seal, the fox, the rabbit, the mink, that the mother of life put it on. You know, this is the mentality that moved people, stood up against in the early 1970s, and is still standing up against till this day. Because despite everything that this system had come at moved with, you know, the beatings, the jailings, the bombing, the burning alive of our babies, we can be hurt and we have been hurt. We grieve for our family and we'll never stop grieving for them. So we can be hurt. We're alive. We have feelings. So we can be hurt, but we won't be stopped. And that's the most important thing. Because we know that as long as we keep fighting, as long as we don't stop, no matter what this system comes at us with, like I said in the film, we are victorious. Because it's a fact. You are only defeated when you give in, when you throw your hands up and stop fighting. As long as you're fighting, no matter what particular situation you find yourself in, you are not defeated. And that's the position of the MOVE organization. We have innocent people that have been in prison since 1978. They are serving their 29th year of unjust imprisonment. And we will not stop fighting to bring them home. And we don't give a damn about legality. John Africa, MOVE's founder, taught us in the very beginning of MOVE and proved it to us that legality has absolutely nothing to do with what is right. Because you can be legal, do what's legal, and be wrong as hell. But you cannot be right and do what's right and be wrong. It's impossible. John Africa taught us how slavery was legal. Kidnapping Africans from Africa, transporting them across the water, and enslaving Africans for labor was legal. It was the law. Same with apartheid. Apartheid was legal. It was the law. So was the Holocaust. But none of these things were right. Saying that when a person is about to be executed, that innocence is not the issue. Well, what the hell is the issue if innocence is not the issue? But that was the law. The U.S. Supreme Court made that the law. But it's not right. Resisting these things, apartheid, slavery, the Holocaust, etc., were illegal, a crime. But it wasn't right. It's right to resist those abominations. So you see, MOVE don't care about legal. We understand that legal has nothing to do with what's right. And when legality coincides with what is right, we don't have a problem. We're not little spoiled brat kids that, you know, if your parents say right, you say left. You know, that we're not on no crazy trip like that. We're committed to what is right. So if legality coincides with what is right, no problem. But when legality conflicts with what is right, then we say to hell with legality. We opt for what's right every time. And if this system got a problem with it, it's their problem. It's their problem. Because we are committed to what is right. And for real, particularly in the United States, you know, they can't justify their position because they taught me and teach every child in like second grade that the United States was founded on revolution, on resistance, you know, on defying the law, defying King George of England here, going to war with cops called redcoats, you know, saying, give me liberty or give me death. Every 4th of July in the United States, it's called Independence Day, where people like Paul Revere, Nathan Hale, all of these, you know, early so-called patriots who defied legality, went to war with the government, are celebrated as heroes, as freedom fighters. Now, if resisting wrong and justice, if defying legality and going to war with the government is to be celebrated, you know, if such people are to be declared heroes, then apply that across the board. It didn't stop in 1776. Alright? And if it's criminal, if such behavior, such conduct is to be criminalized and penalized and punished, well, wipe the 4th of July off the map and declare George Washington, Nathan Hale, Paul Revere, all those people, criminals. You can't have it both ways. It's one way or the other. But then you have to change one of the founding documents of the United States called the Declaration of Independence. That tells you that when the government proves to be a despot government, you know, does not operate and conduct itself in the interest of the people, then it is not only our right, but our duty, our obligation, our responsibility to confront and, if necessary, abolish that government. That is what the Declaration of Independence says. Now, how can we be criminal for conducting ourselves in accordance with the Declaration of Independence? You see, legality is really whatever those in authority at the time say it is, which is why MOVE do not conduct ourselves based on some standard created by our oppressor called legality, something that changes from one day, one week, one month to the next, you know, something that implemented one day, amended the next day, and eradicated the following day, and reinstituted, you know, a few days after that. How can you conduct your life on something so flighty, you know, something that changes and amends and is a chameleon, really? How can you conduct yourselves according to that? What's right is right. Everybody can relate to it. But legality is something different. And MOVE is clear about that. And it is this kind of information, this kind of understanding, that government officials and their bosses do not want MOVE influencing people with. You know, they don't want us putting out information like this. They don't want us affecting people and influencing people with our conduct and our belief. You see, the government, through the media, tried to convince people that the MOVE organization is just a bunch of, you know, crazy people that just like to holler and scream and curse and don't have a purpose and, you know, are just radical, you know, with no rhyme or reason, and that we're dirty and nasty and, I mean, the whole bit, just so that people would not want to hear anything that we have to say, would not listen to us. Because once people hear what the MOVE organization is saying, they know that we are not crazy. They hear the sense in it. And our enemy, our oppressor, has no defense against the truth. 1,000 lies can't stand up to the single truth. And they've been pushing the lie ever since this system. Ever since this system. You see, MOVE is compassionate and loving. We do what we do out of love. Out of love of ourselves, first and foremost. Because you can't love nothing else if you don't love yourself. So we do what we do because we do love ourselves. And ultimately, because we love life. We put nothing above living things, living beings. Our very first demonstrations were at the zoo, at the circus, at Ferriers, in defense of animal life. We had demonstrations in front of unsafe boarding homes for the elderly, where elderly people were being abused, both, you know, emotionally and physically. We had long sustained demonstrations at the Board of Education for their misdirection of our youth, at corporate, you know, polluters of our environment, because we weren't going to sit by quietly and watch, you know, the air, the water, the soil that we must have just be polluted beyond belief, beyond recognition, without standing up against it. You know, these are the things that the MOVE organization did in the early days. The MOVE just stepped out there, you know, exposing these situations and confronting them, demonstrating against them. It was for simply speaking freely, telling the truth, not even telling a lie, telling the truth, speaking out with truth, that led to our arrest, which put us into the legal system in the first place. You know, you heard two of my sisters talking about, one, Janet, was talking about a day when her and Lee Singh were walking to the store. They were obviously pregnant, were stopped by the cops, thrown stomach first into the side of the police van, and just, you know, tortured from there on. Handcuffed to a chair, not allowed to go to the bathroom. I mean, anything they could think of. You know, Janine talked about how her 3-week-old baby had his head trampled to death by Philadelphia cops. Nobody was ever held accountable for that. You know, MOVE people are a peaceful people. We simply spoke out freely, which is what they tell you you have a right to do in the United States. Freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom to protest, you know. But when MOVE did that, we were attacked by police. And that's how we got into the legal system. You know, that's how we got beat up by cops, locked up by cops, trampled by cops, our babies killed by cops. And MOVE made our position clear. We are a peaceful people. We are uncompromisingly opposed to violence. But we are not stupid people. We understand clearly the difference between violence and self-defense. You are not violent despite what governments tell you. You are not violent when you defend yourself. That is the law of life, the law that every living being follows. Every single living being, without exception, defends itself when attacked by whatever means that it can. Well, who gave anybody the right to hallucinate that they could take that away from us? MOVE ain't letting nobody take our right of self-defense away from us. Because if you're attacked and you refuse to defend yourself, you are violent. You are masochistic, ultimately suicidal, And you can't get any more violent than that. MOVE is neither masochistic nor suicidal. We are very clear on the instinct of self-defense. And ain't no judge or no state, you know, congressman, representative, and any other official is not going to take our right to defend ourselves away from us. This is the position to move, and it is one of the things that scares our enemy. They don't want us influencing people with that kind of information. So finally, the bottom line is that this government saw a group of people, a family of revolutionaries, that they could not control. You know, there have been other organizations in the United States, Black Panther Party for one, you know. There have been the SLA, the Sudanese Liberation Army, Black Liberation Army, you know, the Puerto Rican Independistas in the United States. And the government has historically used certain tactics to neutralize these organizations, you know, and they follow the same pattern. First thing the government does is has somebody approach you like they're your friend and offer you money. That's what they did with us. You know, they wanted to give us funding so that, you know, we could set up an office and do our work easier, blah, blah, blah. You must have thought we were crazy. We made it clear. We don't want your money. We don't need your office. You know, you cannot buy us off. We're not for sale. Can't co-opt us. We have our direction, our way of doing things, and we're fine with that. We don't need you to help us. You know? And so, when officials saw that they could not buy us off, could not co-opt us, then they moved on to the next level. That's when they came with the brutality and intimidation, you know, beating us up, you know, approaching us saying, look, you know, you can't demonstrate here. You know, you got to pack up and go home. And we would say, what are you talking about? Why can't we demonstrate? Isn't this the United States where you tell people that in this country you have the right to peacefully protest? What does the Constitution say in set move? Except the MOVE organization, what's going on here? And, of course, the cops didn't want to hear that, and that's when they would start beating us up. So we ended up in the court system, you know. That didn't stop us either, because we're not intimidated by judges. When we would go before those judges, you know, we would put out information to them, just like we did to cops or anybody else that we talked to. And when those judges sat up there, you know, arrogant, seeing, hearing that MOVE was telling the truth, that we're right, righteous, honest people, you know, when they sat up there and would just watch the sheriffs or cops beat MOVE people up right in front of them and do nothing but find us guilty or hold us in contempt, you know, MOVE people would find out where those judges live. And then we'd set up a demonstration at their house to tell their family and their neighbors what they were doing downtown, because they wanted to maintain this facade of respectability in their neighborhoods. But we weren't going to let them do it. We ripped the cloak of respectability off of them, and we would set up demonstrations right in front of their house. Well, of course, they were outraged about that, and it would lead to, you know, more arrests. But MOVE people went in and out of that prison. We didn't care. We threw bodies at this system as fast as they could process us. And finally, there were so many MOVE cases that the whole Philadelphia court system was backed up, I mean, tied in knots. And what they did finally was they had to just start dismissing some of the cases, just throwing them out. But MOVE did not stop, because we can't be stopped. They don't have enough guns, cops, judges, prosecuting attorneys, prisons, or prison guards. You know, they don't have enough bombs to stop this organization for fighting for life, fighting for what's right. You know, we won't be stopped. We have the power of life behind us. That's our belief. And just like life can't be stopped, we won't be stopped. I'm not saying that an individual person in move can't be killed. Of course we can be killed. We ain't no superheroes, you know. We can be killed. Yeah, we can. But we won't be stopped. The fight that this organization is waging will not be stopped. There is nothing more important to us than life, which means freedom, which means health, which means satisfaction. You know, it means equality. You know, the system talks about equality, but there is no example of it in the system. You know, in the MOVE organization, we have dogs, we have cats, and if we walk into a room and a cat or a dog is sitting in a chair, laying in a chair or on a sofa, we cannot come in and just move that cat or that dog off the chair so that we can sit down. I mean, that is just not done in MOVE. And it's because we truly believe in equality. We don't feel like we're better, more important than any other species of life, because we all of life comes from one source, the source of life, from our mother, Mother Nature. Now, if we all come from one source, how can any one species be more important than any other? You see, those scientists, with their arrogance, feel that way. And they felt like when they discovered, for example, that the honeybee was being, you know, eliminated, that they were gradually dying off or something was happening, you know, their numbers were quickly diminishing, that it wasn't no big deal. I mean, they're just honeybees, who cares, you know? But they soon found out that all of us should care, because it's honeybees that pollinate crops so that we can have food. And they realized that there was a problem here with the numbers of the honeybees diminishing, because it was affecting the crop. You know, so people can hallucinate that we're so damn smart, that we know everything, and that we're so superior. But that's all it is a hallucination. Because Mother Nature, the coordinator of life, knows what she's doing. And all we have to do is leave life alone, you know, so that Mother Nature can do her work. The instant we start feeling like we know better and we can change things and we can, you know, interfere with life, that's when all the problems arise. But anyway, I'm saying this is MOVE's belief. We believe in life. We understand that all life is coordinated to be free. Jails, cages, you know, racism, exploitation, they don't come from life. They come from humans. You know, life is coordinated to be free. Life is naturally equal. There is equality in life. You know, and we cannot interfere with that without causing our own demise. And like I said, that's what puts us in conflict with this system that doesn't give a damn about life, that only seeks to control everything. I mean, look how they're genetically modifying food. I mean, who the hell do these people think they are? You know, they know better what a tomato should be than mama does, the source of the tomato? Absolutely not. But that is the arrogance that we're dealing with. So this revolution that MOVE is fighting is for all of life. It's for all of us, for every living being. You know, we have people that have been in jail 29 years this year for simply speaking out in defense of life. That is it. My family is not in prison for the accusation of murder no cop. They know that my family did not kill no cop. I mean, the evidence is clear. The trajectory of the bullet that killed the cop makes it physically impossible for my family to have done it. If they felt like MOVE people killed the cop, they never, ever would have demolished the scene of the crime. Vital evidence in any murder trial. They never would have done it. But they did do it because they know MOVE didn't kill no cop. They simply failed to kill MOVE people in August of 1978. So the next best thing to them was to put MOVE in prison for as long as possible. What better way to do that? They had a dead cop there, you know? They would never, ever admit that they messed up and killed one of their own. I mean, when MOVE tells people about this, that cop was shot by one of his own, you know, of course people are skeptical and say, well, yeah, you know, I guess you would say that in defense of your family. But please, MOVE did not invent the term friendly fire. This system invented that term. And they invented it because obviously there were countless situations enough to warrant a label being put on it called friendly fire. There were enough situations where people that were, you know, at conflict with each other ended up wounding or hurting or killing their allies, their comrades. And they developed a word called friendly fire to describe when one side in a conflict, you know, injures or kills one of their comrades. MOVE didn't invent the term. This system did. So why should it be so unreasonable and unfeasible to understand that that's what happened on August 8th of 1978? That is the root of the May 13th, 1985 bombing. Our unrelenting protest, our unrelenting fight for our family that was in prison, that is still in prison, that we are still fighting for, you know, didn't have anything to do with anything else. Neighbors could complain about us all they want. That ain't even the issue. Like I said in the film, the U.S. government does not give a damn about black people complaining about their neighbors. They don't care about white people complaining about their neighbors. They don't care about the people at all, bottom line. So for them to, you know, try to convince people that the local, state, and federal government came out to our home and did what they did in terms of shooting over 10,000 bullets at us, tear gassing us, deluging us with water, dropping a bomb on us that ignited a fire that they refused to put out, and deliberately shooting at us, you know, as we tried to get our children, our animals, and ourselves out of that blazing inferno, you know. They did that not because of no damn complaints from no neighbors. They did that because they were determined to do in 1985 what they failed to do in 1978. They were mad as hell in 1978 that they had failed to kill off MOVE people in that house. So when they came back in 85, they were determined to do what they had failed to do. And that's what it was all about, bottom line. But finally, you know, they killed 11 move people, five babies, six adults, and not one single official ever held accountable. Somebody is responsible for the death of 11 people. They tried to think of a way to charge me with 11 counts of murder. They considered it. When they arrested me, they took me to the homicide division of the police department. But I guess it was just too outrageous even for them, so they backed off and didn't do it. But somebody is responsible. Now, I'm the only person to be arrested, charged with anything as a result of what happened May 13th, 1985. Not one single official charged with anything. How is that possible? But yet, they want us, they want you, they want the public to accept innocent MOVE members rotting in jail for almost 30 years now under the allegation of murder, as if they got a problem with murder, as if they are so appalled, you know, by murder that they want to lock anybody away that they deem to murder. Well, how come the cops that murdered my family are not sitting in prison doing 100 years each like my family is, if murder is the issue? How come not one of those officials is sitting on death row like Mumia Abu-Jamal and being labeled a murderer? How is that? Why is that? And then they wonder why MOVE people and a whole lot of other people have absolutely no respect for the legal system. You know? Well, that's why. They wonder, you know, why we are revolutionaries, why we revolt against, you know, this rotten system. Well, that's why. That's why. You know, we know what's right, and we ain't accepting nothing less. We won't accept anything less. You know? And we're not wrong for that. And nobody can prove us wrong for that. And that's the bottom line with this organization. We're never going to stop fighting against being oppressed and being treated unjustly. We ain't never going to stop fighting against that. And we will never stop supporting anybody else that fights against that. Whether it's in the environmental area, animal rights area, anti-death penalty area, anti-police brutality area, or whatever. We will support people that take a stand against injustice on whatever level. On whatever level. Right now, the MOVE 9, my family, they will be coming eligible for parole next August of 2008, and there are some letters, I think, up on the bar there that we hope that y'all will take and look at them, and if you are okay with it, sign them and send them into the parole board, because we want the parole board to know that people around the world are watching what's happening with this situation, and that people know about it, you know, and are not just going along with it. So, you know, that's one thing we're asking people to do. As time goes on, you know, and the situation develops, we may be calling on people to do other things. But we will make that as public as possible. Right now, at this time, those letters are the activity that, you know, we're pushing right now. I'm not going to go on and on because I want Fred, who is with me, traveling with me on this tour. He's a long-time MOVE supporter, and he wants to talk to you a little bit. So I'm not going to go on and on. I just want to make sure, you know, that people understand how serious this fight is. You know, people's lives, people's freedom is at stake here. And I'm not just talking about move peoples or political prisoners or, you know, other activists. I'm talking about each and every one of you. Each and every one of you. On any level, you can be the victim of this system if you are not already in a crystallized way, because we all are, but in a crystallized way, you know. I mean, you can walk out this door and be on your way home and get stopped by a cop, and you can end up dead or in jail, charged with something that you didn't do and spend years in jail. You know, that can happen. It can happen to your child, you know, your child. I mean, you can suddenly find out that you got cancer, that you have emphysema or a lung disease or whatever, asthma. Where do you think those things come from? It's no mystery. When you erode your environment, poison your environment, you're poisoning yourself. You know? So, I mean, any of us can be a victim of this system at any time in a crystallized way. So this fight should be personal with each and every one of us, because nobody is immune. Nobody is immune to it. And if you're smart, you will start working now to take whatever insurance you can out on yourself so that it doesn't happen to you. You're not being told to fight for Ramona, you know, or anybody else. I'm telling you to fight for yourself, to take stance and take action that will ultimately protect you. Because the stronger the message to those running this system is that people are not tolerating this insanity, the sooner we can bring it to an end. And finally, just for clarification before anybody has to even ask the question, when MOVE people say the system, we're not talking about some abstract they out there. When we say the system, we are clearly and definitively talking about anything and everything outside of life. Anything that does not come from life, that is not alive, is the system. I don't care whether you're talking about money, science, technology, you know, government, whatever. If it's not life, didn't come from life, then it's the system, plain and simple. If you're not talking about a bird and you're talking about a plane, you're talking about the system. If you're not talking about the sun and you're talking about a light bulb, you're talking about the system, plain and simple. You know, that's what MOVE means when we say the system. Anything and everything outside of life. So, you know, with that, I will stop here and I will say, long live revolution, long live John Africa, long live the MOVE 9, long live Mumia Abu-Jamal, long live all freedom fighters wherever they may be on this planet. Long live Earth First, the Animal Liberation Front, the Earth Liberation Front. Long live the Zapatistas, the Puerto Rican Independistas, you know. Long live our sisters and brothers in Vieques who are still fighting for their life on an island that the U.S. wants to use for bombing practice, you know. Long live all freedom fighters, wherever they may be. All those who fight for life, who understand the importance of life. Long live the spirit of resistance that we must all find within ourselves. Long live revolution, and down with this rotten ass system on the move.
On the move, my name is Fred Riley. I've been a long-time MOVE supporter and a long-time supporter of Mumia Abu-Jamal. I've been involved with this movement for over 10 years now. And I'm here tonight with Ramona because I wanted to let people know about what brought me around MOVE, the reason why, you know, I'm committed to standing in support of the MOVE organization. I was raised in New Hampshire. It's a state in the United States. It's a New England state. It's predominantly white. There's very few of any kind of minority. And any kind of minority population. And I was introduced to the MOVE organization because as a young man growing up, you know, I felt a lot of dissatisfaction with the system. I was raised on a farm, a dairy farm, and I was raised around a lot of animals. We had a lot of land. It was very, you know, to me, it was a peaceful environment, you know, birds and trees and such. And as a child, I, you know, had a lot of interaction with that environment. But as I grew up, you know, more and more I was introduced to this concept of domestication, you know, like domesticating the animals that we were working, that we were using on the farm, you know, misusing really on the farm. And, you know, I was dissatisfied with my life there, so I started to develop a lot of problems as a young man. I was very alienated against, sorry, it's some sort of distraction behind the
door. Can you keep quiet, please? Keep quiet, please.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, I had a lot of problems, and amongst those, not the least of which was a lot of drug abuse problems, and you know, I used to travel all over the United States after I, you know, left school. I had a lot of problems in school. I didn't really relate well with the other kids because, for the most part, my school was like middle class, kids trying to fit in, trying to build up their careers, the foundation for their careers and their ability to make money. And, you know, I didn't really relate with them. My sisters, I had three sisters. They all really wanted to fit in because we're like the only kids from a farm in the entire school that we were at. So it was like they were on this, you know, desperate, urgent mission to fit in and, you know, get along with people. And, you know, it just made me really bitter and frustrated. So like I said, I developed drug habits, and then I was traveling all over trying to find, you know, some kind of solution, you know, to my problem, some kind of like outlet, some explanation of why I felt like, you know, I was so frustrated and desperate, really. And, you know, I happened to be going by a bookstore where they had Mumia's book, Live from Death Row. So I picked up the book and I was drawn to it and I read it, and, you know, it really opened my eyes to a world of, you know, a world of injustice that I had never really seen before. You know, you feel it, like I felt it as a young man, but I didn't, you know, I couldn't focus on, I couldn't really crystallize, in a crystallized form, identify. So, you know, as soon as I read the book, I was totally outraged, you know, completely outraged that this kind of thing had, you know, gone on, and that I had never really been, you know, taught or shown, you know, like nobody brought it to our attention as young, you know, teenagers or anything like that, that people didn't take a stand against what happened to Mumia. And in his book, I read about, you know, May 13th, you know, what happened to the MOVE organization, and that nobody had ever took a stand against this. Like, why were people pretending like this, like, you know, something that really focuses, like, the injustice of the United States and the system, you know, something that is a crystallized example of this kind of murderous insanity that this system, you know, generates, that this system, you know, creates. You know, why didn't anybody do anything about this? Why weren't my parents outraged about this? Why weren't my relatives outraged about this? Why weren't the teachers up in arms about this? You know, I'm supposed to look up and respect these people that are pretending like, you know, a genocide didn't exist in my country, you know? And this is even, you know, in addition to what they did to the indigenous people, which I did know about, which caused me a lot of aggravation and frustration. But, you know, here was yet another example. People brought here, you know, MOVE was identified at that point to me as a predominantly black organization. Blacks, I knew, had been brought here as slaves and then supposedly had become free. And then when they rallied together to fight for justice, you know, for freedom against animal enslavement, against environmental enslavement, this system came along and basically wanted to put a squash on it, wanted to say, you know, you're black, you can't do this. You know, and if you do, and if you do operate in this way, if you do behave in this fashion, then we'll just kill you. You know, and to me that was completely unacceptable. So I made a commitment when I read that book that I was going to do everything within my power to stand up for Mumia Abu-Jamal, to stand up for the MOVE organization. And really at the time, the only way, the only outlet I had for that was to do tables for Mumia. So that's what I did. I did tables for Mumia, where we distributed information on his case, and also they had Live from Death Row at the table. Because of my activity doing that, I was introduced to the MOVE organization when Ramona came on a speaking tour in California. And again, like, to me, it was, you know, a real eye-opener, because Mumia's book touched on what happened, but Ramona and also Mike Africa Jr., who you saw in the video, was there. And he was actually born in prison. You know, his mom and his dad were taken prisoner by the system in 1978, and his mom was pregnant with him at the time. And so he actually was born a political prisoner to the United States government. And, you know, they gave me information about MOVE's belief, and, you know, that was it for me. I understood that, you know, this system had to be stopped, you know, and that's the position I took. That's the position that I, you know, that's the decision I made, was that I was going to stand by MOVE and do everything in my power to stop the system, you know, for the good of all life. You know, at the time I didn't really identify it as for my own good, but, you know, over time I came to understand that. And I just wanted to point out, like, you know, I talk about the domestication of animals, but this system's program of domestication does not stop with animals. The reason why I underwent such frustration, the reason why I was, you know, imposed on by that frustration as a young man, is because this system does everything in its power to domesticate young people. Because they identify young people as the future generations of these countries, of these towns, of these industries, you know, the workers in their factories, the laborers in their farms, you know. And so the mentality of domestication is what this system uses to get rid of the threat that young people pose to this system. And I'm saying it's everybody, because it comes at you as a young, everybody, you know, has gone through this. And by being on a farm, you know, here I was, you know, mistreating these animals, enslaving these animals with my, you know, with my dad and my granddad and, you know, everybody on the farm. But it was in, you know, placing that mentality in me to believe in domestication. Because nobody wants wild animals on a farm, just like the system doesn't want wild people in the streets. They don't want people to have a connection with their instincts. They don't want people to understand the principle of freedom. They don't want people to defend themselves against the pollution of their air, their water, you know, against the pollution in the food, you know, that everybody needs to eat. They don't want people to stand up against genetic modifications. This system is trying to take all life and twist it and domesticate it so that it will serve the needs of the industrialists, the ultra-rich few people that, you know, oppress all life for the sake of their own gain. And I'm saying they'll do anything within their power to keep that system in place. And by growing up on a farm, I witnessed firsthand the domestication of life. I took part in the domestication of life. You know? Like, we really abuse those animals. I'm not going to lie about it. I mean, it's fucked up, you know? Like, they don't deserve it. All life has feelings. I could tell. You know, I would relate to my dog, you know, but I wouldn't relate to the cows. You know, I would relate to my cat and pet my cat and feel like, oh, this is my beloved, you know, kitten and stuff like that, because a cat in science, you know, is identified as a pet, you know, to be loved and cherished, whereas a cow is identified as food, which is to be butchered and devoured. I'm saying that's the division that science creates in our minds towards life. You know, and people need to understand that this is a system of training that has been imposed on all men, on all people, you know, men, women, children. And as long as people subscribe to this system and allow themselves to be duped by this system, they're going to continue to believe in this system of training, you know, domestication. Because the system ultimately feeds on the strength of life, you know, just like when you eat a carrot or a spinach or eggs or whatever it is you might eat, you're using the strength that you get out of that to power yourself. This system takes our strength, misuses it, and feeds us weakness, because they don't want people to actually utilize their strength to fight in the system. They want people to utilize their strength to provide them with gain, with money, with power, with status. And John Africa teach that people need to govern themselves. All people need is to be given the direction to govern themselves, to know the difference between right and wrong, and to be committed to protecting themselves from harm. And they'll do the rest of the work themselves. They won't need to be led. They won't need to be governed. You know, it goes right along with the system's training of feeding you weakness and taking your strength. If you're constantly voting for somebody, looking to somebody else to give you your purpose, looking to somebody else to lead you, then you will never have the ability to lead yourself. That's John Africa's teaching. And that was the understanding that was given to me by John Africa through the MOVE organization. So I guess what I want to just, you know, end by saying is, you know, people need to stop being tricked by this, you know, insane, maniacal system. You know, the psychotic killer that constantly preys on people's naivety and inability to identify what's happening to them. And I've fell victim to that for a long time. And I'm very resentful of this system, because I was unhappy my entire youth because of that. You know, yeah, I had, you know, happy memories and everything like that. But when you look to your parents and receive no direction, and these are supposed to be your ultimate link, you know, to understanding. When you look to your relatives and get no compassion, when you're upset, when you look to your teachers and they have no understanding to give, when you look to your government and it has nothing to offer, I'm saying, where else do you have to look? You know, you're devoid, you're depleted. And it really, really made me bitter to this system. And is, you know, the system really had turned me against it a long time ago. All I needed was the understanding to identify what that system was and the need to fight it. And, you know, to this day, I'm, you know, grateful to the MOVE organization, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and John Africa for giving me that understanding. On a move.